Jonah is a book that I've not taught on before, and it's a book that I really like a lot because I see a lot of me in Jonah. I called this Reflections on Jonah. So it's just kind of my thoughts, just as far as methodology, the way I wanted to look at Jonah. Jonah is one of those books that everybody feels like they know really well. I mean, it's, you know, you started, if you were in the church at all, you started very young with Jonah, and everybody knows the story of Jonah and the whale. And I feel like I, until I was about 30, just kind of glossed over it. Oh, I've read that, read it, just read it quick. But then I heard a guy talk on it and kind of challenged me to slow down and look at Jonah a little closer. So I didn't even get out of chapter one. So I'm not even going to get to where most people start in Jonah, which is around the time the fish shows up. So, and as Alex said, I'm open to any rabbit trails you want to take us on, or anybody wants to chime in, you are just raise your hand and I'll be happy to turn the mic over to you. Before we get started, I wanted to, one of the things that Janice and I are very interested in is creation research, creation science. Janice is a scientist. And early on in our marriage, we engaged a lot of people in creation science discussions. We're real excited about the whole intelligent design movement. I continue to have good, solid evolutionists tell me that ID is not science, which I think is just, I just about laugh out loud when they tell me that intelligent design is not science, but evolution is science. And all I can chalk it up to is the spiritual battle that we face, that they are literally blinded and think their faith in evolution and mysterious hidden processes is more scientific than my faith in what God, the eternal God, says. So I say all that I start with, I want to put a little caveat on the front end, that Jonah got onto a boat headed for Tarshish. And most of the commentaries that I read put Tarshish somewhere far west Mediterranean, Spain, France. I mean, he wanted to go as far away in the known world as possible when God called him to go to Nineveh. I thought that was interesting, and I looked up how far it was from Joppa to where they think a Tarshish would be. It's 2,150 miles, which is a very long sea voyage. I'm sure they maybe stopped or whatever, but I have to think in terms of these primitive, can barely write. I mean, if you believe, you know, our scientific, non-believing friends, you know, it's like these are folks who could barely put two words together. You know, they were just after the invention of the wheel. There's even people who would say, not even written language, this was all written much later because this was just an oral tradition. And yet they could go 2,150 miles in a boat. So I have a lot of good Christian friends who, when we engage in talking about creation science and the flood and things like this, they have a hard time believing it because we're so saturated with evolutionary thinking, and, you know, we're advanced and we're new and we're smarter and we're evolved. So these, you know, poor backward blokes, we don't even know how they got food because they didn't really have utensils. And so I just wanted to point that out. And I looked up across the Atlantic Ocean is about, I think from Spain to New York is like 3,600 miles, 3,800 miles, but not a lot further. I mean, when you're talking about somebody going out on a 2,100, and obviously, in the as you read it at the beginning, it didn't seem like this was some type of stupendous Columbus-type voyage. I mean, it sounded like this was pretty standard stuff that they would. These are trade routes where they had things that they were taking with them. So that was an interesting thing that I wanted to point out. So starting in Jonah chapter 1, this evening I want to really focus on three words, and they're the words presence, the word fear, and the word know. So starting reading in chapter 1. Now the word of the Lord came to Jonah, the son of Amittai, saying, "Arise, go to Nineveh, that great city, and cry out against it, for their wickedness has come up before me." But Jonah arose to flee to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. He went down to Joppa and found a ship going to Tarshish. So he paid the fare and went down into it to go with them to Tarshish from the presence of the Lord. Now, it's most likely that Jonah wrote this book after the fact. And I'm intrigued by the honesty with which Jonah wrote. Now, obviously, I believe in the inspiration of the scriptures, and the Holy Spirit was instrumental, and maybe at some points he had his arm behind his back, twisted up, making him write the truth, because we know that God speaks the truth. But I would, you know, I mean, I just think, man, I think I would be crying out, no, don't make me write this. I've had better days. Boy, can't you focus on, you know, the work I did, the good things that I did. But the word presence, it says Jonah arose to flee from the presence of the Lord. I imagine he was so struck by that he had to say it again. He's like, yeah, you heard me right. I went down to go to Tarshish to flee from the presence of the Lord. So I thought, here we have a guy who God spoke to him. And again, we're Bible-believing Christians, so we read a lot that God speaks to people. He's always, you know, from early on, he spoke to Adam, he spoke to Abraham, he spoke to Moses, he doesn't speak to me a whole lot audibly. This has got quotations around it. So God spoke those words out loud to him. I imagine he could have been sitting at the dinner table. He could have been walking down the road. It was probably somewhere he wasn't expecting it. Somewhere maybe even where it's like, how did God know I was here? So right on the heels of that, he decides to flee from the presence of the Lord. So God, who found him wherever he was, does that strike anybody else as just very strange, very odd? I used to think when I was younger, a younger Christian, and my friends and I would talk about that, wouldn't it be great if God spoke to you, just spoke to you and told you what to do?
It would be helpful.
It might be helpful, unless he tells you something you don't like, which I've read the whole scriptures, and there's a good 80% of it that I'm not always that comfortable with, if not more. I mean, just what he's told me here, I can't imagine if he were to appear to me and give me something specific about my life, you need to do this.
Do we know where Jonah was? North of Joppa? Maybe. Do we have any idea?
I don't know.
The 2,100 mile thing blew my mind.
I don't know. I mean, all that we know is, yeah, I mean, it says he went down to Joppa.
Right.
Which, in my understanding, that's a very common Jerusalem-type language, because Jerusalem was a city. It's kind of up. It's like you go up to Jerusalem, you go down to everywhere else.
Right.
So if I had to venture a guess, not knowing, that's where I would guess, somewhere in that vicinity.
One would think if you were inland, that was probably the closest, you know, city.
Yeah. Obviously, he did make the decision that, hey, I know God is omnipotent and I know he's omniscient, but I'm going to take a shot at this, running from him. I'd make a beeline for what I thought was the quickest and best route to get away. But one of the things that strikes me is that's insane. That's just insanity. I mean, that's my first thought. My second thought is, how insane am I then? Because I have to admit, while I maybe haven't told anybody that, I mean, I've lived like that. Like, God can't see me. Maybe, you know, if I just kind of keep a low key and maybe I can flee from the presence. I mean, like I said, to say it out loud, to tell people, hey, I was fleeing from the presence of the Lord, that's got to be humbling, wouldn't even begin to do justice to that. But back to the speaking to thing, when Janice and I first started dating, or courting, or whatever you want to call it, I was a brand new Christian, and I didn't know much about the scriptures and things. And God didn't speak to me using quotation marks, but he impressed on me that she was raised in a Christian home, and I was raised in a non-Christian home, and I had tons of garbage and baggage and things, and God impressed it on me right away that this was the one I was going to marry. So I was, you know, that's great. This is wonderful. He's shown me. I mean, it works, you know, this new Christian thing, and God really does show you stuff, and he really does direct you in. Because right when I became a Christian, right when God spoke into my life and made me, become a Christian, drew me to himself, opened my eyes. That was my first thought. Because I'm like, there are probably no girls in the whole world who believe this. There are probably no women anywhere. I was 20 years old. That was just, I don't know why. That was just one of my first thoughts. Like, okay, well, you know, I'm going to be a Christian, but I'll probably be a missionary. I'll probably be like Paul or whatever. So anyway, one of the first things that he spoke to me in my heart, not audibly, simmer down, Alex, I wasn't certifiable, was that I needed to tell her about my past, where I'd been. It's like, if you're going to spend the rest of your life with this woman, conceivably, it's only fair she knows what she's dealing with, what's going on. And I mean, that's one of those where I'm like, surely I didn't hear him right. Surely, God, did God really say, tell her? So I went all through that in a car ride of about 3 hours. But it was really hard. I mean, I told her, kind of. I started out just, I got to tell you something. I mean, because I was like, I need to put it out there or I'll just explain it away and I'll justify it. So I got to tell you something. It's really hard. Please be patient. It may take me a while to even get up the nerve. So I was on the hook already. And when I went through it all, you know, she said, I already knew. I already knew all about you. She had a friend who I didn't realize had told her everything about, I mean, all my partying and where her, crazily enough, the way God works, it was Janice's good friend whose roommate lived in my hometown at Michigan. She was a roommate at Michigan State. So she had, I was like, what, just one night? They just, hey, there's this guy who, my hometown. I don't know how that all happened, but. Surely enough, she knew all about it, and she said, God had impressed upon my heart that if you didn't tell me tonight before we got home, I was never to see you again. Whoa. So I was like, whew. It's like, don't say anything else. Please don't tell me anymore. Please don't tell me anymore. So anyway, that was my thing about God's presence and him speaking. As I get older, I think I want to know, I want to hear from him less and less. I think I'll just stick with what I got because I have a hard enough time with this stuff, much less all the other things. So I can relate. The second word, as we read on, starting in verse 4, but the Lord sent out a great wind on the sea, and there was a mighty tempest on the sea, so that the ship was about to be broken up. Then the mariners were afraid, and every man cried out to his God, and threw the cargo that was in the ship into the sea to lighten the load. Now, as an aside, I'm a businessman. I run a sales department for a business. And these guys just threw their business overboard. You know, so if you're wondering what kind of a storm this was, it was so bad that they decided, we're not going to have any more business. You know, our ship's going to go to the bottom. We're going to be dead. It wasn't a squall. It wasn't a passing thing. I mean, these guys, to recognize that, these were hardened mariners. They'd obviously, again, had regularly taken 2,100-mile voyages on the sea. This was probably not your everyday run-of-the-mill. This would probably be a once-in-a-lifetime type storm they were facing. But Jonah had gone down into the lowest parts of the ship and had laid down and was fast asleep. Yeah. He was...
It kind of reminds you of when the Lord was sleeping and the great tempest was going on.
Yeah, it does.
He said, Lord, don't you care about us at all?
So a caution is, and I say this, so I'm cautioning myself, just like, have you heard anybody who's trying to figure out what to do and God gives them a peace about it? Remember Jonah. Seemed pretty peaceful in the midst of rebellion, in the midst of running.
Oh, that's a good point.
He could obviously, to me at this point, he had completely justified himself. He had done all the sinful gyrations in his mind to say, you know what? I'm probably in God's will now.
You know, there's really, this is interesting.
I know, it seems strange.
There's a lot of theology here.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of stuff. There's so many things you can look at. Like, I was on a cruise once, and the movie theater was in the lowest part of the boat, and that was the one place you could feel the boat. But I could say Jonah felt more comfortable during a storm in the bottom of a boat than he did obeying God. He felt like he was getting out of something by running away. And that was a better feeling to him, apparently. These guys are freaking out. They're all praying to their pagan gods. Mm-hmm. And he's asleep.
He's asleep.
Not because he's innocent and blameless, but he thinks, I'm getting away from God.
Right, right. I have, and he went down in the bottom of the boat. It's down not there. Far enough away from the presence of God to be on a boat. He's down in the bottom of the boat. You know, surely God can't see me here.
Right.
So, I mean, you hear people talking about that. I had peace about that.
Yeah.
You know, God, surely God was in it because I had peace. You know, we mentioned Joel Osteen. I know that's a really big catchphrase in the modern church is, hey, I had peace. God speaks to us through his word. And I'm not saying that doesn't have any place, but do the work first. We have to do the work first, which is study the word. If you've got something, a decision or something, study the word first. That's the very first thing. The second thing is seek godly counsel. Hey, here's what I've studied, and here's the decision that I'm facing, and here's what I found. You know, these are the principles that I think I found that guide this type of a decision. What do you think? You know, you're a godly person. You know your Bible. Could you pray about it? Could you study? Could you help me to remember verses that I'm on purpose or on accident forgetting? And praying about it. You know, obviously asking God to do that. And at the end, you know, if you have peace, that's great, but it's not a magic formula. Because there have been times when I knew the right decision and I had no peace. But I knew it was right. It was clear. It was, I mean, God had spoken it. So do what you find in the Word first. That's what I wrote. If all else fails, make sure you do what you found in the Word. So he was fast asleep. So the captain came to him. The captain came down and realized, who is this guy? What's this clown? We're all, like you said, all freaking out, and we got this clown sleeping down in the basement of the ship. What do you mean, sleeper? Arise, call on your God. Perhaps your God will consider us so that we may not perish. You know, maybe you got the magic God because it's not working. We're all calling on our gods, and so maybe you're the one. And they said to one another, come, let us cast lots, that we may know for whose cause this trouble has come upon us. So they cast lots, and the lot fell on Jonah. Then they said to him, please tell us, for whose cause is this trouble upon us? What is your job? And where do you come from? And what is your country? And of what people are you? And Jonah said to them, I am a Hebrew, and I fear God, the God of heaven who made the sea and the dry land. I'm at a loss. He's running from God. And what does he say? I'm a believer in the true God. That's who I am. I fear the Lord. Tons of scriptures come to my mind. Proverbs is full. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. Hello, Jonah. Your fear is obviously not producing wisdom in this situation. So I just find that amazing that that was his response. But then, again, as I am critiquing Jonah, I think, have I ever done anything like that? I made a profession of faith at 12 through some circumstances. And only God knows if I was truly saved. Then I always say that I was 20 because that's when my life changed, which I think is biblical, that's when I started to see the fruit. But I made a profession when I was 12, and I thought I understood who Jesus was, and I would say I was a Christian. I would be at parties doing things, and I loved it when a religious conversation would come up because I would jump up and say, I'm a Christian. I don't know why. I don't know why I would say that. And it explained later a lot of the looks I got. Like, really? And amongst you? Pagans. We were all pagans together. And I mean, yeah, I'm sure, I don't know, I'm sure their astonishment was, but I'm a Christian. But I would have said that. I'm like, if I would have known that terminology, it's the equivalent of, I fear the Lord. So I'd have to ask myself to examine myself. I mean, do I fear the Lord? Because it says that the true fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And wisdom is obedience to God's word. That's true wisdom, is trying to conform your life to the image of Christ. Unfortunately, I see myself way too vividly in that statement. And then I realized, you know what? He was trying to convince himself, I think. Because that's what I was trying to do. I think that he was trying to portray that, yeah, this is who I am. This is who I've always been. This is what I am, which I'm sure gave him a lot of befuddled looks from these guys. So then it says, then the men were exceedingly afraid. Exceedingly afraid. It seems like they're more afraid after he says that. Why would that be? It's not recorded that he told them everything that's going on, but basically he spills his guts. Says, here's what's going on. God spoke to me, and I'm supposed to be going here, and I'm going this way. And they were like, you know, I don't know your God, but he seems like he's got a lot of power. And you're telling me that I've thrown my lot in with somebody who's in rebellion to a God who can do all this stuff. That's why I would think they probably had, at that moment, a more clear picture of the danger they were in than Jonah did. Much more clear. Which is, again, one of those paradoxical theological things. But I think we've all been in that situation of where we've had friends who are making decisions and calling themselves a Christian. It's like, if you're really his, he's not going to let you get away with that. He's going to do whatever it takes to bring you back. You know, and I read in Corinthians when churches are turning people over to Satan for the destruction of their flesh, that doesn't sound like a good time to me. That just doesn't seem like something I want to have any part in. But the people that are doing it, I should say, when we're doing it, we have no concept of the danger we're in. Because it's like, well, if you really understood my circumstances, you would realize that doesn't really apply to me. Which is, I'm sure, what Jonah was telling him. So, well, I'm not really running from him, you know, but I'm just running from him. I'm just not ready to do what he's saying.
I don't know, how many times have you all looked at this? I really haven't much. I'm just floored. And I think it's because I'm really only looking at things through the eyes of sovereign grace the last few years. But this is just amazing. These guys all have their individual gods. And he announces, I believe in the God who made all this, and that I'm trying to get away from him. And God immediately puts it on them, this is because of this.
They've already cast the lot by here, and the lot fell to him too.
Right.
They're like,
well, that's another thing, that twice you see lots cast, once to pick an apostle, and this, and both times it was dead on.
Right.
What does it say? Jim's always saying the lot is cast, but the outcome is the
Lord. It's of the Lord, yeah, that's in Proverbs.
You know, not to endorse, you know, flipping a switch, whether you get a divorce or not, or a guest lot, or something stupid. But it's kind of weird, and this is amazing, I mean, where this ends up going, just in the first chapter. There is so much theology here.
There is a lot of theology.
That God uses this man. First of all, why does God have to tell you over here to go preach to these people here?
I don't know.
Because he wants to, and he's got a big
plan. Because he can.
And in so doing, he gets these men saved, maybe, where they believe. I mean, he intended to save these men, maybe. They end up doing a sacrifice like Jewish people. Where'd they get the idea of sacrifice to this one God?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that amazing? I mean, they throw him off the boat, and then they're like.
Right. They do throw him off the boat.
Phenomenal.
So they said to him, why have you done this? What were you thinking? What are you thinking? We're pagans and we know we wouldn't do that. For the men knew that he fled from the presence of the Lord because he had told them. Then they said to him, what shall we do to you that the sea may be calm for us? Not sure that I would have asked Jonah that at that particular moment. For the sea was growing more tempestuous.
What were their options,
though? True, yeah. What were their options? And he said to them, pick me up and throw me into the sea. Then the sea will become calm for you.
Amazing.
For I know that this great tempest Because of me. He knew.
He's like, but I still get out of preaching in Nineveh. If I go in the ocean.
Maybe. Yeah, he may have. He may have been thinking, hey.
I'm going to die in Hansen.
Yeah, and again, and that's some of the sermons that I've heard, and I didn't even go into that about the Ninevites. I've heard a lot of that, the Assyrians, and how wicked they were. And maybe that was what he was thinking. Anything but that. Have you seen how those guys treat people? No thanks. I don't care if God's with me or not. Because I've seen and I've heard and I've read some of the things that happen to God's prophets, and it's not always rosy. There's dudes sawn in half and, you know, string you up and stone you and throw you in pits and leave you for dead. And so I'm not going to those guys who are the... Janice had a... She's reading a history book. And as I was studying this, she's like, hey, you may want to read this. And it just said some of the things that the Assyrians did. It was worse than probably most horror movies, which I hate horror movies. I've always hated horror movies. I just don't... If you like them, we need to talk. But... But they had this thing about skin. They liked to skin people that they conquered in war. And not only was that bad enough, then they would coat things with it. Like their most sacred rooms were wallpapered with skin. These guys are far removed from God's plan. Say that. Conquered kings, they were sadistic. Next to the road, they would stand them and they would brick around them. They would build them into a brick hollow. So they just starved. And they said the reason was so that people could hear them scream and cry out. You know, I mean, you think you hear modern day stuff with Hitler and things like that and really horrible stories, but that's not new stuff.
Not getting your stain wiped on the plane properly.
Yeah, right. So these were seriously frightening folks. But again, you're dealing with the God of the universe. I mean, I would... Actually, I can't say that I would do any different, but I want to believe and I want to know or come to the point when... take a step back. I'm American all the way through. When I hear about persecution, I hear about stuff, I'm afraid. I'm afraid of that kind of stuff. You know, I mean, just be very honest. I mean, I do not relish the thought of being hung upside down on a cross. I do not relish when I read in Voice of the Martyrs, people that are burned alive, people that are locked up in their churches. But every time I hear stuff like that, I say, Lord, grace. Man, I just need grace. Help me to trust in your grace and believe that they can do nothing to my soul. I mean, and I'm like, help my faith to be bolstered by what these people are doing and the stories that I hear. And I like to be reminded of that stuff because we have such a cushy life. And my life is hard. I'm sure your life is hard. I mean, we view our lives as hard, but it's nothing in compared to the kind of stuff that people have to go through. So I'm struck by this, that he knows, just this sure knowledge. I mean, I almost hear him being a prophet. I mean, just having that big, strong voice, for I know that this great tempest is because of me. And one of the things that I was telling Janice today is that I relate to Jonah. And at first, that's kind of depressing to me because I'm like, oh, I just see too much of myself there. But the beautiful thing is that God is sovereign. His mercy is all along under here. I mean, I would not be surprised if in verse 8, verse 3, anywhere along here, it said, and the Lord forsook Jonah. Fine. Do what you're going to do. Go where you want to go. I'll go find somebody else. Because he doesn't need Jonah. But he doesn't because he's his child. And he says, all right. He keeps going. He doesn't get angry. Even the tempest. I mean, we often think of, oh, he's mad and he's causing a storm. And I'm sure that's what these pagan guys were thinking. No. Just like me with my children, I'm going to keep bringing them back. I'm going to keep, all right, I'm going to show you that doesn't work and that's not going to work. And I'm just going to keep bringing you around and I'm going to get you where I want you to go. I mean, I've said that to my children before. You might as well go here because I'm not going to stop until you get there. I mean, we can do this the hard way or we can do this the easy way. And unfortunately, all too often, I choose the hard way, just like Jonah did. So those were the three points, the three words that I focused in on, was just Jonah running from the presence. But the beauty is that's true. He wasn't running from the presence. The presence is everywhere. We are in the presence of the Lord. But I have to ask myself, how often do I operate as though I'm not in the presence of the Lord? And that's a hard thing, and I know all through Psalms, that's why David reminds himself. And I think of that psalm, if I, you know, go to heaven, you are there. If I make my bed in Sheol, you are there. If I think the night will cover me, surely you are there, for you are light. He's reminding himself, because I'm sure he's struggling with the same thing. You know, I mean, we saw through David's life, the choices that he made. I hate to think that he made those choices fully cognizant of the presence of the Lord, that God was right there with him. So, like I said, I'm going to be done here before we even get to the fish. But I do want to point out one thing. And the fish is where God really makes his mercy manifest. So at the beginning of chapter 2, it says, at the end, it says, "Now the Lord had prepared a great fish to swallow Jonah." Obviously, his sovereign plan he had prepared beforehand. "And Jonah was in the belly of the fish 3 days and three nights." And chapter 2 starts, "Then Jonah prayed." Why did it take Jonah 3 days?
Stubborn.
Right. He was stewing in his juices, literally. Stewing in the fish's juices. I mean, he knew. Again, at that point, he knew what was going on. He had admitted it out loud to other people, and he still wouldn't say, "Lord," I mean, and we'll see, you know, we won't see it because we won't get to it, but later on he does say that, "I'd be better off dead." I mean, he started back here, I think, thinking, "Lord, just kill me." And God's like, "I'm not going to let you off that easy. Oh, don't you wish that you could die? I got plans for you. I got work for you to do. It's not as simple as me bowing my will to you. You don't get to pick." Man, I can use that because I throw pity parties for myself. And "Lord, why don't you just use someone else because I'm so riddled with sin." And he's like, "Duh." Like, I didn't know that when I started here. You know, when I called you and when I brought you and when I opened your eyes. But just like Jim likes to say, what I love about the book of Jonah is it's packed with grace. It's covered with grace. I like Bible characters that remind me of me. Joseph, I don't like. I don't like Joseph. You'll probably never hear me preach on Joseph. He did everything right. He seems like he did everything right. He had, you know, at the beginning he was kind of selfish and had that coat of many colors and stuff, but he just had a long life of faithfulness, and I'm glad that there's people like that, but I don't relate very well to Joseph. I don't relate very well to Joseph at all. I'm thankful that the Lord reacts to me in heaven, even when I'm reacting foolishly on earth, that he's not moved off his throne, that he's still in charge, that he's still doing the work that he set out to do, and that I'm not going to screw it up. I'm not going to stop it. Hopefully, my screw-ups in life are going to be a lesson to someone else, my children, friends, that they can not follow the same ways. Anybody have any questions? Thoughts? Comments? Rebuttals?
You're right about slowing down and reading. It's amazing how much more stuff creeps out that way.
Jonah's a good one. Yeah. And what I love, if we had gotten all the way through it, is that Jonah, at the end of the book, is all mad. Because they believed. He's mad because they believed, and he doesn't think it's fair. But the interesting thing is that Jonah has such a short view. I mean, if you go two books over, Nahum is all about the judgment. That was only short-lived. It was a short-lived repentance, and sure enough, they were true to their colors, and God brought in someone else and said their wickedness. Just when he said, "Their wickedness has come up before me, speak judgment on them," he wasn't lying. He wasn't waffling. He was saying, "They're going to have repentance for a time, and I'm going to have some trophies of grace, of my grace in that people. But as a society, they're done. I mean, it's just a matter of time." But Jonah had his little view. Yes?
So I suppose as Christians, we need to be very scared when we're getting away with that stuff.
Probably. You may think you're getting away with it for a time. You may think you're getting away with it, but you're not.